It's arcadatiology.
Arcahulawatagy?
Right. Arcadatiology. Data before it knew it was data.
What do we got?
Today, we have a book.
Book?
Yep. The Bradshaw's Guide. Officially, Bradshaw's Railway Timetables and Assistant to Railway Traveling, named after founder George Bradshaw, who produced his first timetable in October of 1839. The range of titles bearing his name and commonly referred to that name alone continued well into the 20th century, long after he had passed away.
So what makes a book arcadatiological?
Well, information has been gathered into compendia for a few thousand years, but Bradshaw's Guide stands out because it aggregates rapidly changing real-time-ish data, like train schedules, and it puts the UK on time zones. He optimized it for mass public use and consumption. It combines standardization, usability, and scale. It functions very much like an early information system for a network, and it is for everyday actionable use. Interestingly, many railway companies were unhappy with Bradshaw's timetable, but Bradshaw was able to circumvent this by becoming a railway shareholder and putting his case at the company general management. He did some change management, Mark. Soon, the book, in its familiar yellow wrapper, became synonymous with the publisher. A railway timetable was a Bradshaw. No matter which railway company had issued it, or whether Bradshaw had even been responsible for its production or not.
Well, okay. But there's lots of books describing things by then.
Not at this type of detail. And blending in travel advice, like where to stay. Do you remember the triptych?
The spiral-bound set of maps put together by AAA, customized to a vacation route, highlighting directions and points of interest? Sure.
That's the only way we went on vacation as a kid. Look at it this way. Bradshaw's Guide is the first real practical operational data product. It was time-sensitive, highly structured, combined multiple data sources from many railroad companies, and designed for end-user action. Your travel planning.
Don't you think you're stretching this data product metaphor a little bit?
No, 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 data product breath. Look at it this way. Our modern equivalent, that is a data product in a data mesh concept, has operational dashboards, APIs, and user-facing data services. This is the closest early analog to a data product. It's discoverable. It's trustworthy. It's usable without an intermediary. It is continuously updated. This is the kind of stuff that you talk about all the time.
I hadn't thought about it quite that way before.
And now you have. This is John Ladley.
And Mark Cooper. Welcome to the Rock Bottom Data Feed.
It seems that John and Mark have made the critical mistake of leaving the recording unattended. You would think they would know better. So I, the Talking Moose, will introduce the show for them. Maybe you remember me from earlier shows. If you don't, maybe you should go back and listen again. Today we have the rest of the interview with Tony Mazzarella, the 8-bit consultants, comments from John and Mark, and of course the famous game show. I hope they invite me to play the game show someday. I think I would be good at it. Uh-oh. Here comes John. See you next time.
Today's guest on the pod is Dr. Tony Mazzarella. It's part two of his visit. And I wanted to focus on something else that him and I have talked about in the past. He says most organizations don't have a governance problem. They have a vision problem. And I find that pretty accurate. He continues in one of his articles, governance structures exist in most organizations. What they lack is shared meaning. Programs respond to behavior. Vision shapes it. Governance fails not because programs are poorly designed, but because they attempt to correct outcomes stemming from an unchanged vision. A data vision detached from organizational vision is incoherent. A standalone data strategy often embodies this contradiction. This is a strong, strong lesson for leadership as well as people in the trenches. Well, this is all well and good, but John, we don't often do this much. How do we do one? Well, let me give you an example. Let's take the cockpit of a commercial airliner. What happens in the cockpit, everything, is governance in action. Checklists, every single time, every single flight. Both pilots run the same checklist and verify each other. Pilots learn procedures from regulations, operational rules from the airline, and then there's your laws of physics on how an airplane flies. All of this is oversight. All of this is these are the right things to be done. All of this is embedded. There's no one in the cockpit saying do this or do that. Your vision needs to describe how you become the cockpit of an airliner. Whether your data products are being built, or you're doing some sort of data mastering, or you're attempting to clean up data quality, or you're struggling with the data going into your AI, all of your process need to incorporate the oversight into the day-in, day-out work. And along the way, be nice to each other.
We now continue our conversation with Tony Mazzarella. To hear part one, look for The Fuss About Tony Mazzarella at rockbottomdatafeed.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Now, some companies, as you said succinctly, you know, they're different than other companies, even within the same industry. I go to insurance company A, mm-hmm. and they do things a certain way, and you go to insurance company B, and they do things entirely the same, entirely differently, and they're in exactly the same industry, you know, whatever. Right. So what do you do? A company that says, we're going to get a chief data officer and that's going to fix it all. But you know, from a readiness standpoint, their ability to create collaborative mechanisms, probably not their best core competency or something like
right.
that. So what's your thought about organizations that are hiring the buzzword or doing that? And what would be some practical advice you gave an organization said, I think we need a CDO. That'll fix everything.
I mean, my advice would be to really consider to do what, right? And I'm saying that a bit tongue in cheek, but you know, I think where you're going,
that's not tongue in cheek at all,
right? It's an obvious question, running into the same challenge where we throw all of these solutions out and they're not really effective because we're not addressing the underlying challenge, right? Who are you hiring for your CDO? And what is their skill set? And what are you expecting them to do, right? The CDO job lies at the intersection of business outcomes, risk, and reality. And that's really difficult to throw on any one person, especially someone coming from the outside into this social system, and they're going to have to unravel it and work within it. And I question whether, you know, the leadership understands the organization that well, right? All that to say, I think that my advice would be you really need to understand how your organization operates, right? What are the constraints that this CDO is going to have to operate in towards driving the desired business outcomes with data, towards managing the risk of data while operating in reality, right?
Yeah, it works well until you hit reality.
Yes. Yes.
So I did want to circle back quickly. What was the third thing? So we got through the first two things that we were going to tell the CEO and the board when we had their attention for a half hour.
So we talked. So the third thing is I think the more granular social piece within collaboration and how we carry, how we deal with the human dynamics, right? I think a good example of this, right? Because I'm a metadata guy, right? Is we talk about defining the data, creating the business glossary. I think leadership views an exercise like that as, yeah, well, we have all this data, just go like write down the definition and get it in the thing and you're good to go, right? The reality is that definition is a negotiated definition and it's subject to change or evolve through the activities of the organization, right? Through M&As, through, right?
And it's negotiated.
And there are dozens of examples there. I'm sorry, what was that?
And it's negotiated in the best case.
Right. And so those are the, and there are many more cases, you know, throughout data management and data governance, the things that we need to do where situations like that manifest. And I think the way it's been sold to leaders is that there's focus on artifacts like the business glossary, like the framework or the organizational structure. And I think that is something that we need to solve at the lower levels of the organization. I think to sum it up, our C-level needs to understand that this is an organizational and cultural change initiative because the tried and true means of how we design our organizations, right? And thereby constructing the social systems that everyone shows up to work and operate in every day is not conducive to effectively utilizing data towards company objectives and protecting this, use air quotes, asset.
Because when you've got, you know, I know that we've got 100,000 data elements, and I know that we have business glossary entries for 18% of it, right? That's something you can hold in your hands. You can take it to your management. Management doesn't have to understand what any of it means. All they know is 18%, okay? Last month, it was 14%. This month, it's 18%. Next month, it's going to be 25%. Awesome. Go forth and do. And everybody thinks they understand and are making positive progress.
Right. And Mark, the worst part of that, right? And I've done that. Okay. Is that it works for a while. But when it comes down to can we do the things that we want to do strategically? And I've just been telling my leadership, oh, we're doing great. We're killing it. We're at 70% completeness on this glossary. Yeah,
whoop-dee.
We're burning millions of dollars in an ineffective data strategy, right? It inevitably doesn't work. It's a house of cards. It falls apart. And then, you know, the collateral damage of that is all the other really good stuff that we have built, the relationships, the collaboration, that stuff that we haven't been throwing on a dashboard gets washed away in the inevitable restart of the program. And we're back to square one. And this is why we don't have that sustainability and resilience of data governance in most organizations.
So how do we put culture on the scorecard?
That's an interesting question. And Mark, I think that, you know, I have some ideas. I think that, you know, I've just really started to articulate this, and I think that there are a lot smarter people out there than me that will probably have good ideas. So hopefully some listeners will will come up with ideas. But along the lines of back to, you know, our opening statement, thinking about it as an adaptive learning system. Can we establish KPIs and OKRs around collaboration, right? How many different people did we bring together to solve a problem, right? What was the effectiveness of that? What, you know, how much have we learned? What processes have we changed in the organization as a result of the things that we're doing? And then, of course, you can look at some of the KPIs, but understanding what they mean, right? So I mentioned earlier that, you know, I view data quality issues as signals around what's happening in the organization. Are those metrics improving, right? And you need to be careful there because, you know, your issues can spike because you're looking more. It doesn't necessarily mean, you know, we've gotten worse, right? And so you need to be really aware of how you're structuring these and messaging it to leaders, right? But we need to be thinking of, we need to be really crisp on the purpose of data governance and how we measure it relative to other things in the organization.
Then when you view it as such, then you're not telling leadership, look at us killing it because we've got 70% of the catalog loaded.
Right.
No one cares. That's just if I'm managing the project of rolling out the catalog or rolling out data oversight or data management, whatever, I have a project plan and I'm executing and I'm knocking down these requirements, and all I have to do is tell leadership we're okay. But too much of the data industry and the vendors that support us and the consultants and the talking heads that we have to deal with in this view this as that's what we do. And I don't think that's what we do. Those are requirements. It's like kind of like if a carpenter, I do this in my talks. I ask everybody, if you're building a house, anyone ever build a house, hands go up. All right. So you're on the job site day one. You're so excited. And the carpenter comes up to you and he holds a hammer and he puts a hammer in your face and says, is this okay if I use this? I'm thinking I got a loser for a carpenter.
Right.
Our profession does that every damn day.
Yes.
All right. So how do you discriminate? You got the CEO in a room. Where do I draw the line and not talk about the catalog? Or what do I say about the catalog? Because that's our job to do that. But how do you, where do you draw that line?
Well, I think it's the context, John, right? I mean, you know, if you're going and looking for money to build out a catalog, you know, you better be able to explain why. Right. But I think the benefit of doing so is indirect in what you're doing it towards. Right. And so we're then shifting the view of that capability towards, you know, the thing that it is supporting. Right. And that's typically going to be somewhere in the data strategy, right? It could be, we need to know what data we have so that we can manage it to achieve this thing, right? And whatever KPIs have been established there, it's sort of an indirect path to it. Now, that's not very compelling as an overall, how is our data governance program doing? But we need to establish that this is a foundational capability that enables it and explain how we can measure the impact of that as best that we can. And it's not always straightforward. I don't want to make that seem simple.
Yeah, but it's table stakes. Look, if I want to build a new factory, I have to put in some pipes and some plumbing and some electricity and a footing and all of that. And you can't say that's optional. And that's what a catalog is. That's all. It's all essential infrastructure.
Exactly. Right? How can you manage something if you don't know that we have it, right?
Yeah.
But I think there's another piece in there, John, that you know, drives me a little bit crazy around, you know, the definition of data governance and what is it. there should be distinction between the governance capability and the management function. The purpose of governance is to improve, right? The performance of the management function. Creating the catalog is a management function.
Yay.
Right. And I think it boils down to that. So I view them as distinct in and of itself, and that there should, you could view it as data governance has enabled the creation of these foundational capabilities that are now supporting this. But we need to get away from the confusion of data quality and metadata management being data governance. It is data management.
Yes. So that's right. The fourth thing I put, if I have you mentioned the three things quite eloquently. The fourth thing I have is this data stuff is no different than anything else you lead in this organization. There is a separation of duties like any other corporate capability, and everyone shoves everything into one side, and that has been a profound mistake for the last 40 years. Yes. And we need your guidance to keep that separated, because that's going to be your job. Okay, anyway, can we go back to some more lofty stuff now? Okay.
Absolutely.
Ethics. Ooh. I mean, we're talking about the anthropological stuff. We're talking about all this kind of stuff. But let's just talk about society and using all this data and everything, and this developing collaboration and in an organization. All of a sudden, the organization is going to be data driven and do stuff with data. And then you're going, should we be doing this or not? So, in your practice, in your research, whatever, talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, John, ethics is it's a meaty topic that we could probably spend hours going through, right? I think that, you know, we first have to distinguish between legal and regulatory requirements and ethics, because they are different. They operate at different timescales, right? The laws of society do not keep up with the shifts in the ethical landscape and the expectations of people. And for that reason, I am a firm believer and a strong advocate for bringing in ethics into your governance framework so that we are evaluating the use of data and what we want to do and the benefits to our shareholders against the potential risks, and considering the benefits to the customers or the data subjects that are out there. And I think that even if it's legal, doing so will give you some confidence in that you are going to get the value, you're truly going to realize the value of that investment that you're making. I always tell my team in the data quality practice that, you know, everything is really data quality, or even our data protection stuff, because quality is interpreted by, you know, did we get the value out of the investment? Right? The big picture quality. If you're, you know, there's the data quality, the completeness, but then you have your product quality. Are people using the product? Is it achieving its purpose? Did it get the value for the investment?
Go back to Deming and say, you know, have you met customers' expectations?
Exactly. Have you met customers' expectations? Right. And to that end, the data quality could be perfect. It could be pristine data. But if you end up on the front page of the Wall Street Journal, right? All of that value is gone in that investment, and you created harm for the organization. And so I think it's a critical aspect of data management, whether you're viewing it from the control lens, meaning we need to comply with regulation. If you're being ethical, you're generally going to be well inside the lines of legality, right? And if you are applying ethical principles to how you make decisions on what data initiatives to pursue and how you're going to use data, right? You are going to have a higher probability of realizing the value that you estimate in making that investment in that solution. And I think that, you know, the other piece, and we don't need to go this far today, but is I think how you do that is also really important.
I'm curious, on a practical level, how has your dissertation research impacted your approach to data governance?
The PhD journey itself and my research has shaped and changed how I am practicing in my day-to-day, right? Because I'm thinking about the function of data governance in this social context, when we're addressing data quality issues that need to be resolved and bringing stakeholders together, right? It's almost intangible, but it's, you know, we're now framing this from the perspective of collaboration versus policy and SLAs, and we need to do this, right? It's just, we're all on the same team. We have to come together and solve this problem, and it might be a difficult problem to solve, right? But I think it's more of a personal framing of how we approach practice. To generalize, right? I've been in organizations that have really good leadership alignment, culture, and I think that's a very effective, and so you're able to operate in that way a bit more effectively in making that change. I've been in other companies where that approach is probably not going to be as effective, and I don't know that it would translate as well there.
I just have one real quick one. And this is just really from my own information. You have your job title, yeah, which to me sounds like you're a chief data officer in function. Is that really your role where you are? Or do you have an Uber data person you and your organization?
Yeah, John, we have an Uber. We have a couple levels of Uber data folks in how we're structured.
Wow.
And I think we're actually structured really, really well, and it's been very effective. In my prior role, absolutely. I was operating as a CDO and then some, bit of a smaller company. But organizationally, and, you know, again, given the size of our company.
Thank you, Tony. Just gobs of good stuff. We really, really appreciate your appearance here on the Rock Bottom Data Feed. But you are not free to go yet.
Uh-oh.
We have two questions that we ask every guest. The first question is, who has influenced you the most in your career, alive or dead? What individuals influenced you the most, and what was it you got from them?
Yeah, John, I mean, not to kiss up a bit, but I mean, your books early in my career, they've been, you know, that's how I learned data governance and applying those things. So I very much consider you as part of that group.
And who else? Who else?
Suppose you never existed. I would go to W. Edwards Deming is a key influence in my practice. I'm a total quality management, total data quality management guy.
It is
the cornerstone.
It's amazing. when I talk to people that are actually making traction in data and have structures that are doing things with data, someone always is heavily influenced by TQM.
Yeah.
Someone is always heavily influenced by Deming and understanding the root concepts of that. That's pretty impressive. All right. The last question. You are bestowed with a new employee named Harry Potter. You can make a wish. You can change anything you want. What is the one wish you will make that will be granted in your profession?
Related, of course, to data.
Wow. The one wish related to data. That is a doozy of a question, guys.
Why we save it for last.
Yeah.
I mean, the other way to phrase it, if you could fix anything with the snap of your fingers, what would you fix?
Yeah. Okay. I think that's a good way to think about it, John. If I could snap my fingers and fix all of it, it would be that we have a clear way of structuring the systems and the design of our organizations to deliver high quality data responsibly.
That would be good.
I don't know if that's a realistic wish, but we're wishing.
Well, that's why we call it a wish.
That's it.
Yeah, it's a wish, you know. That's very, very good. You'll be back in a minute for the game show, but Tony Mazzarella, thank you so much for being on the Rock Bottom Data Feed. This has been pretty darn cool.
John Marks, my pleasure. It's been a lot of fun.
The Rock Bottom Data Feed would like to thank our supporter, Dataversity. If you're a data governance practitioner or involved with data governance in any way, Applied Data Governance Practitioner Certification might be for you. Help you prove your value, validate what you know, make you stand out in the job market. The program offers a holistic learning experience, tying together governance, business strategy, modern principles, things that work, things that don't work, all in a series of rich learning formats and real-world application. So go sign up for data governance certification at dataversity.net. And don't forget your Rock 15 discount. That's Rock 15.
These are dispatches from Rock Bottom, dredging up practical information, advice, and food for thought. So much of corporate behavior is driven by beatings, or more accurately, by the avoidance of beatings. Research consistently shows that people are more motivated by avoiding negative outcomes than achieving positive ones. This tendency is referred to as negativity bias. Now, most companies have a forum for reviewing system failures. You know, the website goes down for half an hour, and you have to show up in front of the IT executive committee or whoever to explain what happened, what you did to fix it, and how it's going to not happen again. And nobody wants to have to do that. One day, the metric that your team generates has a problem. An incorrect answer was given to a customer, and the next thing you know, you're summoned to explain yourself in front of the executive committee. Your next 2 days are consumed with preparation. On Thursday, you show up, present your remediation plan, and take your beating. It turns out that the data problem originated in an operational source system. The error probably could have been caught if someone was looking for it, but the data was considered to be good enough for operations, and besides, nobody knew what it was supposed to contain anyway. This is how data silos are born, and I totally understand it. Management is incented to not rely on other teams, to not leverage existing artifacts. I need to own everything I need. After all, if I'm going to get a beating, it's going to be for something that my team did and that I can control. It's the natural consequence of misaligned beatings, and from a data perspective, it's totally wrong. This is where data products can really help. With data products, responsibility, accountability, and ownership are established up front. Understanding the data, especially its expected content, becomes standard operating procedure. And while problems should be caught before making it all the way to the customer, we have clear defect identification, escalation, and remediation procedures. The entire team, business, technical, and data, stands together, takes their beatings together, and moves forward together. That's what I think. We'd love to hear your stories if you're willing to share. Write us at rockbottom@counterthreadedproductions.com. We're back for our famous game show, the Audio Data Rorschach Test. Tony, in a minute, I'm going to ask you to pick a number between 1 and 4, and then I'll play for you a piece of royalty-free public domain music.
Because we have no money.
Yep. Someday. Since music is evocative, I'd like for you to tell us the first thing that you think of that's related to data when you hear the music. Make sense?
Makes sense.
All right. Go ahead. Pick a number.
3.
Okay. 3. We have to maintain the illusion of randomness here. All right. Here we go. You hear it again?
One more time.
It was a little Pink Floyd there.
That, to me, evokes data flowing downstream into a warehouse and it not quite fitting and hitting against the wall.
The data splat.
That's it.
Well, Tony, thank you very much for playing the game show and for joining us here on the Rock Bottom Data Feed.
Thank you, guys.
The 8-Bit Consultants. Advice in 256 characters or less, and 4 times better than those 2-bit consultants. Today's question. I read that data governance needs to be replaced by data certification. What's that all about?
Many so-called experts claim to have a better idea or rebrand data governance. Here's the key. Data governance isn't an invention for data or anyone's ticket to fame. Data governance should be invisible. Anyone selling their new view is selling snake oil.
The 8-Bit Consultants. If you have a question in 256 characters or less, leave a comment or write us at rockbottom@counterthreadedproductions.com. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be considered legal advice. Counterthreaded is not responsible for any losses, damages, or liabilities that may arise from the use of this podcast. The views expressed in this podcast may not be those of the hosts or the management. This podcast is not intended to replace professional medical advice. Any resemblance to actual events, entities, businesses, or persons, living or dead, is purely coincidental. Your mileage may vary. In this episode, Tony Mazzarella challenged the idea that simply hiring a chief data officer will fix data issues. Governance is fundamentally a social and cultural change initiative, not just a set of artifacts like catalogs or glossaries. And as John said, referring to a commercial airline cockpit, governance needs to be embedded and internalized to the point where you don't need anyone looking over your shoulder to make it happen. And try measuring collaboration and learning. Speaking of learning, be sure to visit dataversity.net and use discount code ROCK15 to get 15% off your first purchase. Until next time, this has been John Ladley and Mark Cooper for the Rock Bottom Data Feed. Thanks for listening, and remember, when you're here, you've reached rock bottom. You can find more information about the topics covered in this episode, more fuss about Tony Mazzarella, at our website, rockbottomdatafeed.com. The Rock Bottom Data Feed is a Counter-Threaded production, copyright 2026, all rights reserved.